All right, welcome to Comic Playground. We are ready to go, as always. Coleman.
Caliendo.
Adonis.
Hi, I'm Adonis.
Yes, of course.
Did you forget his last name?
No, I just couldn't remember which was first and which was last. I'm going to be, I am and still and will continue to be Caliendo. We, of course, have
Ken.
There he is.
It's so hard with a one-syllable name.
Yeah, well, I was,
Ken?
I was not sure if I was going to go Brown or what. We, of course, Ronnie.
I thought it was back, Lonnie.
Ivory.
Lonnie.
I like Shawnee. Shawnee's a cool name, man.
Shawnee Divery.
No.
Corbin still hasn't gotten any better. He's been sick for 2 weeks. We'll explain that later. No, he's... We're actually, I'm going to pull up the veil. Is it the veil? Is that what it is? Is it
the ski resort? The curtain.
Yeah, we're actually taping this in advance because I'm on the road right now. So if you're wondering how I'm on the road and here at the same time, I'm a time traveler. But we also have a guest this week brought to us by Brown.
Brown?
Our good friend, eventually, I believe, Russ Kazmierczak.
Thank you. That's right.
Is that Polish?
It is Polish.
Yeah, I know. Right. I asked him before the show so I could sound intelligent on it. And Russ, tell us a little bit about you. Where are you? You're from Arizona?
I grew up in Peoria, Arizona.
Okay.
And, not Peoria, yeah. Poland.
I'm sorry?
Not Peoria, Poland.
It would take three of me to get that joke, but...
I don't know if that's a compliment.
No, that's no, it's a joke. It's a line from a joke. I'm African.
He just zinged you, Zach. He just zinged you.
I got zung.
You got zung. You have a brand new past tense of zing. Yeah. Unbelievable.
It's zingered Zach.
Half zung.
Zach has been.
What's
zung.
The? All right. What's
who's
the
guest? Get back to the guest. Get back to the guest. We're not good with guests. This is why we don't have a lot of guests, because we don't pay attention to.
We're
them.
All guests. What were we saying? Oh, I was.
We're talking about your background.
Oh, yeah. Let me see.
I grew up in Peoria, and then I moved to California. I went to college there and lived there for about 12 years in Orange County. And then I moved back here at the tail end of 2009. Okay. When I started...
Okay, when I was asking you about yourself a little bit, I wanted to know where you're coming from in the comic world.
Oh, no, I wanted to give you a geographical explanation of my background first. I was going to go into a lineage of my parents individually, each side of the family tree.
So going back to Jesus Christ, where do you fit on the line?
When my great-grandparents immigrated here from... Oh, no, I self-publish a mini-comic called Amazing Arizona Comics. I'm on issue 37 right now. I've been self-publishing that since I moved back here from California.
Well, tell us a little bit about that.
It is a superhero satire of Arizona news, history, and culture. So I take real aspects of living in Arizona, whether they be current events
or just... Always fighting the temperature?
Oh, yeah. I have a villainous co-op called The Warm Front that consists of characters like Thunder Roland and Hugh Midity. Very clever.
Harry Potter.
Oh, yes. Very clever characters.
Any snowbirds?
Like that. There is a character named Snowbird, but she's only here like 3 months out of the year.
And slows down traffic.
Her superpower is slowing down the town.
I knew it.
So, yeah, obviously, I'm going for the very low-hanging fruit with this comic.
No, that's very, it's very interesting, but I actually wonder, outside of Arizona, I guess in any desert climate, do you think people get that as much? Do you set it up well for people to understand
I think
that?
So. I actually exhibited at SPX, which is a small press expo in Maryland. And because at the time Sheriff Arpaio played a big role in my comic, everybody near Washington, D.C. knows who he is. So there was a bit of an affinity for that kind of satire.
That's a wonderful representation of the state.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's kind of what started the comic is I thought, after moving back here from California and watching him on CNN one night, you know, if Commissioner Gordon really existed... They might not have the same views, but he would be a face of law enforcement nationwide from Gotham City. So for better or worse, Arpaio is our Commissioner Gordon. And rather than have a bat signal on the roof of the,
you just
the
broke
sheriff's
Corbin.
Office,
no,
I'm sorry, rather than summon Batman, he summons Steven Seagal in a tank and they go bust up a cockfighting ring in Maricopa. So
it's a story, Corbin. Relax.
I'm good. I'm just...
Oh my!
So yeah, I'm working.
You're bleeding
on,
out of your eyes this time.
It's spreading
tears.
I was like mentally imaging like the
Steven Seagal in the tank.
No, I was.
What
still
would
on
the signal
Jim
look
Gordon.
Like? The trouble is
a chihuahua's head. Yes.
There could never be a bat signal in Phoenix because there's no clouds.
Exactly.
It just keeps going.
It would be on the haboob. You see it once every couple months.
Haboob.
For those of you who don't know what a haboob is,
the non-rated X version. It's a dust storm.
It is the weirdest sounding.
Yeah, I guess it's not a chuckling breast, right?
Ha boob. I hope that's part of the comic.
If it isn't, I hope it becomes part of it.
We influence you.
So tell us a little bit about a little more about it. So,
well, one night when I was driving on the I-17, I got three speeding camera tickets in a row. I was going what I thought was a conservative 65, but the speed limit there was 55, and that's when the traffic cameras were on the road. So the lights were so blinding, those flashes from those cameras. I thought if a superhero really existed, this would kind of be...
Hold on, wait a second. Before you get into it, you saw the first flash, and then you continued to go faster.
Well, I didn't know. I had just moved back here. I didn't know what that was. I just was like, oh, my God.
Like random lights.
It's
a sight of paparazzi.
I was checking my radio dial thinking, inevitably...
Potential stroke? What?
I was hoping for an alien super
suit. It was a UFO. Oh, yeah.
Hold on, didn't they had cameras like that in California?
Greatest Arizonian hero?
Thank you, yes.
Believe
absolutely.
It or not, I lost the instruction booklet.
So after the third one, and I did slow down after the third one.
Good. You're learning.
And then very shortly after that.
Three strikes, you're out.
That's what I've heard. So fortunately.
So you got three.
He couldn't drive, so he sat at home and decided to do a comic book.
Yeah.
He's doing it in jail.
Well, as a comic book guy, first of all, I don't get that reference at all. Three strikes, what does that mean? But
I do.
Oh, okay. But I created a superhero based on that experience. His name is Speed Cameron. He's the living speed camera who has the lightning fast reflexes of a speed camera. So he's essentially a speedster, but he also has a photographic memory.
Wow.
And he's kind of the pivotal character, the flagship character. Arpaio recruits him to be a part of a superhero secret posse.
I've got to admit, when you start out, you do a couple of puns. I'm like, the amount of puns you can churn out. Just have me thoroughly enthralled. Like, I'm amazed and in love with this now.
Oh, it's like, man. Marvel Tales.
Exactly.
Where he just came
out. I haven't even told you about my character, Sam Brero, yet, who puts on a magical
and please
sombrero.
Don't, because Corbin's eyes will bug out.
At this point, I'm okay. I had to get, it's like getting in the cold and in the pool. Well, now
sure.
So,
what if Sam Brero ate
exactly.
At some burrows?
Now I'm accustomed.
Sam Brero eating at some burrows.
That's his favorite restaurant.
Yeah. I got it. Okay. Now I'm in it.
But yeah, that's the crux of the comic in a nutshell is what if superheroes really existed amidst our already turbulent culture and political environment here in Arizona?
And they were all puns.
Yeah. And what if
they were all
punny. Puns? Well, I don't think secret identities would really exist if superheroes were real. It would be so hard to maintain with social media and all that good stuff. So the characters just use their real names to create their superhero names. Like, June Monsoon. Her name was June, but when she acquires the powers of a monsoon storm, she's now June Monsoon.
Just by happenstance.
Well, I was even thinking, forget about the social media aspect of it, like Spider-Man swinging through Manhattan into his window. Like, who does not capture that with all the smartphones now to see and find out what the apartment is?
Absolutely.
Like, you can't have a secret identity.
Well, Spider-Man delivers pizzas, though, too. So maybe he's just delivering pizzas.
Maybe he is.
Right, but take a look at what's happening in the MCU and in Spider-Man Far From Home. And basically all the Spider-Man movies. Now, he's revealing who he is to everybody anyway.
Yeah, so the trailer MJ is just like your Spider-Man, right?
I think he's running for mayor of New York in the next movie, isn't he?
There's a possibility.
I mean, Green Arrow beat him to that, actually. That story's been done.
It doesn't stop Marvel from copying anything DC does.
I mean, that's been the trend for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Darkseid and Thanos.
Oh, look at this. Yeah. So we're getting serious all of a
sudden. Trying to figure out a pun for this.
Spider-Man and Blue Beetle?
I think we did with Darkseid.
Darkseid. If we spell it S-E-I-D, they'll never know.
Is there a cactus crew?
I have the Prickly Pear. They're an identical twin duo of cactus.
The Wonder Twins of Arizona?
Yeah. Of cacti. Of cacti.
Do they touch cactus arms to activate anything?
No.
No, they can't because they get pricked.
Yeah. Ow. Let's activate our ow. Ah.
Powers.
That's a prickly.
Powers.
This is a prickly situation.
Oh, my God. We are one step away from the Wiggles. Fruit salad, yummy, yummy. Yeah, prickly pear, yummy, yummy. Yummy.
Okay. Ouch.
Beauty, mate.
But Phoenix is like one of the, it's like the fifth or sixth largest city in the country, depending on the year. And we didn't have any superheroes. I don't think there were any.
Yeah, there was Phoenix the based. One from the new X-Men.
Well, Nova's from.
With Thunder, not Thunderbird. What was
yeah, Thunderbird.
It was Thunderbird, right?
Yeah, John Proudstar.
Yeah.
The Tracker.
From the reservations, Arizona reservations.
Yeah, but he didn't last very long.
Right. But then also Sam, the Nova, the kid Nova that is near, he's from actually Carefree, Arizona.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Which is kind of fun.
All
right. But regardless, most comic heroes are based out of New York, right?
Yes.
Or, right. I mean, at least the Marvel ones that are from like a real city, whereas...
And I thought, I like
kind of
reading...
Who cares about Carefree? We're
I like
Carefree.
Reading morally ambiguous comics. Great. So like, how would Batman deal with immigration? Like if Commissioner Gordon said, hey, we found out that there's this, you know... group of quote-unquote illegal immigrants hanging out in this underground bunker here, would Batman be tasked with rounding them up? Or you know what I mean? So it's such a...
Well, as a vigilante, he doesn't follow the law, right? I mean...
Right.
But his job is beyond the constraints of law. It's his own code of ethics, right?
Sure, sure.
Still interesting question.
Yeah, at the same time, he puts himself in a counterposition to those who break the law. So... You know, depending on your interpretation of these said laws, like SB 1070 to me was a big deal. But the way I'm able to kind of couch it in a cute way is to just make a parallel Earth 1070 where Sheriff Arpaio is now Dark Pio and he rules that planet. So that's what I call superhero satire, folks.
So how did you get into this?
Well, I've always drawn. When I was a kid, I was a big fan of He-Man, so I would draw my own He-Man mini comics, and I just continued to draw.
Did they do the turn like they did in the He-Man cartoon, where they'd run up toward the camera, turn one way, turn the other, and then continue going straight?
Yep, a lot of that.
Yeah. He-Man.
Had this idea when I moved back here. I had been self-publishing with a friend in California, but he drew scripts I wrote. I didn't have to draw anything. When I moved back here, I wanted to continue self-publishing, but I realized I had to draw these stories myself. So the art is just the necessity of the storytelling, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I'm a cartoonist, but the emphasis to me is on the plot and the satire and kind of that clever, quirky look at Arizona living or culture and politics. So yeah, I just thought I want to keep doing this.
I just think the interesting thing about it is you have to give some exposition for people who don't live here. So mm-hmm. you're kind of just aiming it toward people who know this area first, and then
it's pretty niche. Yeah,
that's the difficult thing, and I don't mean it in a mean way.
I
think that's pretty cool. But if you did give a little bit more exposition and explain to people what life is like here and gave people an understanding of that non-comic version of it, I think it helps people to follow along and see what the parody of the actual living is like here.
Yeah, do the heroes spend a week in San Diego every summer?
They'd probably enjoy that, but you know,
it's a lot nicer there. It's always the same temperature there.
It's always
when it's 115
these are Arizona
here.
Things, right? Like you go down to Rocky Point, which is in Mexico, and nobody outside of Arizona has heard of Rocky Point, but everybody,
even
in
the people
Arizona
from Rocky Point, don't
Rocky
know they're in.
No,
exactly.
They don't know. I think it's Punta de Piedra or something.
So some of the themes are pretty transcendent. I mean, we're all talking about immigration nationwide. So to me, again, when I saw Arpaio on CNN, I thought, I could put him in a comic and people might actually,
that translates. But you do need to know, like, I think it works. A lot of the stuff works better when you've lived here for a while. And it's,
do other states have snowbirds? I don't even... Maybe Florida?
Yes, Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, Las Vegas.
You kind of get a little bit.
And states have the snowbirds that leave the state, right?
So sure. What do they call those? Do they call from their end? Do they call them like sun flights or something?
Well, they call
sunbirds.
Like, don't they call zonies in California? Because I've heard when I was a kid, my parents have said, we're the zonies going to California.
Only people zonies? From Arizona call themselves zonies.
I've never heard that term.
Isn't that a typo? Almost like pizza? Calzonies?
Calzonies.
Caliendo zonies.
Hey, what's going on over here? You want a little calamari with me?
I can see that being you in like 25 years.
Me just being like this?
Like having like an Italian restaurant.
Show my uncles. Hey, Corbin.
This is actually his real voice. He takes everything.
I've been putting on a character the whole time. Get up, come over here. You can't get cheese in Chicago without going through me. Understand that, Corbin?
Is this your witness protection, Uncle?
There it is. Oh, man. Not anymore.
I have a question, though. What is, like, the most interesting part of making a comic? Is it the storyline for you? Is it, you said that you grew up drawing. So, like, what is more of, I would say, not challenging, but just something that takes the most time? I mean, since it's kind of satire, is it, like, based off of, like, current events as is? Or do you have, like, an overarching storyline that you're just trying to, like, go through?
I have both. I have episodic issues that are dealing with very specific things happening in Arizona. Like, I have an issue that takes place when Trump was here back in August, 2017?
Probably the best time Arizona's ever had.
Absolutely.
Incredible ratings for Arizona while that was going on. By the way, Sheriff Arpaio doing a tremendous job.
You know, what's a fun fact is Arpaio and Trump share the same birthday, which is coming up June 14th, Flag Day.
I did not know that.
Absolutely. And my grandpa.
Is that right?
Really? Yeah. And my stepmom, who is so sad about that because of your grandpa.
Oh, yeah. if you'd have met my grandpa, you'd have gotten it.
But I think one of the things we love about superheroes is that they always learn lessons, but they also never change.
Yeah.
So that's one of the funnest challenges is giving
You did not say funnest. Do you write
most fun?
Most fun.
Most fun?
More fun, most fun.
World's funnest comics? Was that a comic?
I think.
Oh, no.
I think we accept.
I go with funnest. The golden age.
Funnest is not
when
real.
When did no. World's funnest debut?
Funnest is not real.
Didn't we just create a past participle of Zing?
I don't believe that. That's not the correct comparative and superlative form.
Let's not make false equivalents.
My question was,
what was that? He was Zung, though.
Yeah.
Why can't false equivalents?
Wade made it up, but he was using it as past.
And why can't it debut it? Since we're not wanting to finish.
Maybe I'm the Shakespeare of comics, making up words as I go.
Here's the thing, guys.
I did think of that when I first saw you.
You guys win. I'm just not on the show anymore. But I've heard so many people. Neil deGrasse Tyson said funnest. And somebody.
I love funnest.
It's not real.
It's not.
No. It's not a word.
What an esteemed league Superman of people
is,
to be in.
But not,
not funnest. But not funnest.
I guess it can exist here.
Thank you.
No problem.
Yeah. Funnest is in our realm.
Earth 2.
Yeah. What's the funnest new word I've heard all day?
More fun is actually improper on Earth 2.
On Earth 2.
And spelled T-O-O. T-O.
T-O.
So on Earth 2, so I ain't having a problem with this then.
Let's keep this going.
Yeah. This is like one of our, like, episode 5 we're doing again. All right.
You guys talk a lot about grammar on this podcast?
Let me tell you. You had some moments on this show.
Hold on. Just because you just completely misspoke is a whole different story.
I mean.
Debuted.
Debuted? Okay. I was under some pressure.
You know, I feel like we all...
And I said debuted after I said debuted back then. And
we spent a whole episode having Corbin listen to Grammar School Rock. Conjunction, junction, what's your function?
Yeah, we went there. Grammar's a big thing here. We have a lot
no,
of...
No, it's not. Just like
because everybody speaks correctly
I was
normally.
Just kidding. Okay, it was a joke. I can crack one. Okay.
Wow. It's no wonder you bleed when the microphones turn on. I think I answered that one, though, right?
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Good enough.
So, favorite non-your own superhero?
Batman. You know, the first cut is the deepest. When I read The Dark Knight Returns, I just thought this is the best comic book, best graphic novel ever made. So
did you go to school for drawing?
Not at all. I'm totally self-taught, and it's just a matter to me of copying all of my favorite artists as best I can. When it comes to storytelling, I took a little bit of, I took some classes in that. But when drawing, I read how to draw comics the Marvel way.
What did you learn?
I have one of those.
Oh, yeah.
What did you learn in the storytelling class? What did that give you?
Well, three acts. You know, just making sure that there is, because I think writers are often tempted by the amazing start they have to a story, but they don't know where that road is going to end. So,
unlike Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
You got it out before me.
You're my hero. Really there?
Yeah. Right there.
Around the same
and call we're back on,
know.
Now we're back on
Coleman,
scene.
I'm going to grill you.
One of these days.
And Dark Knight Returns is a really great example of that, where the last line of that story echoes the first line, where, you know, Bruce Wayne is wondering what kind of life and what kind of death he wants. And at the beginning, it's like this would be a, a good death, and but would it be good enough, you know, when he's racing the car and everything? But at the end, when he's got this little army of of gangsters, these little ruffians, and he's like, okay, I could start a militia with these kids. This would be a good life, you know, good enough. So,
until the Dark Knight strikes again.
Right, and then it's like, let's have a mediocre middle and then an even weirder ending. But that's what Frank was like, this is good enough, when he turned in that script.
Yeah,
but you could tell the folks that are learning about comics aren't laughing at how terrible that. Well, Dark Knight Strikes Again?
Wasn't Dark Knight Strikes Again? He had to change the ending because of September 11th.
Well, the thing is, he didn't have to. He made it a bigger part of what it had to be because
I thought DC editors told him, like, hey, this is just too dark right now for what's going on, because there was a terrorist attack on Gotham City.
But see,
that was part of that storyline.
Yeah. Oh, then he just changed it to an attack on Metropolis. Remember Brainiac? Yeah. Okay. Dark Knight Strikes Again was the 2002 sequel to The Dark Knight Returns.
Highly anticipated.
Everyone was looking forward to it. It was a major flop. And the story itself, it was almost like Dark Phoenix. I guess we're going to look back in a couple of years in the sense that it was anticipated. I don't know if this was – the Dark Phoenix was highly anticipated. But it was anticipated follow-up, and it was just a meh book. And –
He also rewrote a book. Was it called Terror? That he did Dark Horse, Holy Terror.
Holy Terror.
Which was the original ending he had for Dark Knight Strikes Back, the way that he wanted to do
it.
And DC said, no, dude, it's just, that's too dark for what's going on right now.
Yeah. So all they did was change Catgirl's name.
Batman goes after the Taliban. Yes.
And it was, you read it, it looks exactly the same, majority of the book, but then a little bit of a difference at the end.
Didn't that happen with Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Columbine? Didn't they have to delay like the season finale because there was like a school attack or something?
I wouldn't be surprised. Man. I mean, they even should count. Remember the Spider-Man movie poster with Spider-Man webbing the Twin Towers?
You remember?
Yes,
I remember the commercials.
That affected a lot of things in comic culture.
In comics is twisted.
Well, that kind of goes to what I was saying about how, you know, these characters have to be consistent to some degree, right? And if they're so deeply impacted by something that it changes them forever, then we can never look at them the same way again. And that's how it. That's how we approach Frank's Batman. Like, as much as that first volume, The Dark Knight Returns, is amazing, you know, it's kind of now like there are these follow-ups. There's a second and third volume that
not so good.
Do I consider those apocryphal to this? Or
even All-Star Batman was supposed to be the prequel
to
everything, too. Frank Miller and Jim Lee couldn't get along, so they never even finished the story.
Yeah. Oh, in the 90s, there was a Spawn-Batman crossover with Frank Miller and Tom McFarlane. And even that was like, the Batman was like a psycho. And he like went out of his way to place the universe.
Yourself become the villain.
Wow. Yeah. But yes,
that's a good point. Somebody write that down.
The Frank Miller story.
Write that down.
So yeah, to answer your question, Frank, having an ending in mind is to me one of the most important things I learned about storytelling in those classes. You know, making sure your antagonist challenges your protagonist's flaws and all that stuff that I think a lot of writers already know, but I try to keep those ideas fresh. You know, setting rules in your world and adhering to those rules.
I know I've written a couple stories down and things like that, and I've got the beginning and I kind of just see things, watch movies, read books, and all kinds of things like that, and take little pieces to add to my story. But for the most part, the end, I have no idea what that looks like. So it's
so you're doing it wrong.
Maybe you start backwards.
Apparently,
like they did with Game of Thrones.
I've heard.
I was going to say that.
I know.
I've heard that.
Like
a
we
lot
should
of
with
people.
Our podcast. Start with the ending.
Start with the ending.
We're just talking over you now.
I know. So I've thought about the ending.
Oh, you had the floor. You had the floor.
I did. I thought about the ending and what it would be and everything like that, but it's really hard because I don't know too much. I don't have that much more insight as to where the beginning is going to lead to the middle.
Well, do you know what your theme is? Do you know what the point you want your audience to get out of the story is?
No.
Oh, well, I think once you...
It's kind of just a conversation.
That's one of the funnest parts about writing.
It's bled over into me like Corbin's nose from a week ago.
It's contagious.
Yeah, it's just to me, it's like a conversation that I'm writing down, and it's just a conversation about what ifs and oh my gosh, if that happened, then blah 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 blah. Oh, if this happened, then that, then that, then that, then that, then that, and then I just write it down and then kind of make a path to where everything is.
I think that's kind of happening right now.
Yes.
So, Russ, do you do an outline? Start with an outline?
Yeah, I actually do the Marvel method with myself, where I... oh, that sounded a little...
only if you pause and make a face afterward.
This Marvel meth head?
Well, the Marvel method, you know, was when Stan Lee was... Oh, I get to explain some part of comic book history now.
Take the floor.
The Marvel method was when, in the early 60s, Stan Lee was basically starting so many books, like The Avengers and Daredevil and Incredible Hulk and so on. He would basically just give all of these artists, mostly Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko, like the ideas, like, you know, in this one, Spider-Man needs to get eggs for Aunt May, but also the Scorpion's robbing a bank. Draw it, Steve. And then Ditko would fill 22 to 28 or 30 pages with that story. But obviously Stan just gave him maybe 5 pages of action. So this is where the creators' debate of who invented or created what comes in, because the artists were tasked with filling in all of these gaps, filling in all these pages. So when you say the Fantastic Four was co-created by Jack Kirby and Stan Lee, that's because Stan might have said, hey, four people go into space, get crazy powers, come back to Earth, and then you know, live in a big building in New York and fight cosmic crime. And then Jack turned that into an amazing first issue with Mole People and stuff like that. And so they get co-credit for that, and I think that's fair. Some people don't, but whatever. For me, fortunately, I'm both a Stan and a Jack in one body.
So you present to yourself a story that is...
I'm often presenting to myself. Okay. Yes. And, yeah.
Mirror conversations.
You say there's a mountain named Camelback.
Right.
And it comes to life.
Yes.
Write the story.
Absolutely. Yeah, pretty much.
The Camelback Kid. There it is. Kid.
I want you to move to Anchorage and see what your puns are there.
Anchorage.
Like the Hulk character, Anchorage. Rage always.
And that would be a glacier guy with an anchor tattoo on his
body. He'd be incredibly slow. He would be so slow.
He's anchored.
I was thinking he was like an ice pirate, like an ice being, but a pirate, and he was just super angry.
Oh, sure.
This does make me want to do my comic book character, which was Hangry, if you guys remember. Call back to an old episode.
We tried to forget.
Yeah. Well, when he's hungry, he gets stronger. So he's hangry man, or, you know, just hangry.
Just give him a Snickers bar. He's fine.
I think I was cosplaying as him earlier today. I
think. All right, I think it's about time to get into the Comics 101 we were talking about. The other part of the show we were working toward. So who wanted to start on that? Because I don't even remember what it is.
I think Ken had the handoff on that one.
Yeah, pretty much Comics 101. I mean, how do you want to collect your comics? That's pretty much the number one thing.
I could say how to get some good deals, but
you know. No, you cannot.
Well, first of all, I think you need
we'll get good deals, the audience, because we'll be selling to you. Thank you.
Well, first thing I recommend is read a comic. That's the first thing 101, day one.
There you go.
Like, read a comic is the best way to get started.
Like in a newspaper?
Yeah, well, newspaper comic or cartoon strip, if you want. That's where a lot of people start because it was an every Sunday paper growing up. Now all of a sudden the internet's happening. You don't get that as much.
Yeah.
But I can, at least this generation, probably where we first got our starts, were cartoons and Sunday papers, Family Circus, Heathcliff, whatever you wanted to read. And then you had Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. You had He-Man, like you talked about earlier. You had Thundercats and all those comics or cartoons had comic books too. So it was an easy transition. But to collect comics, you know, you just got to go looking for them. So the next thing you got to do is just, okay, you find your first one, you realize, oh, there's another one coming. So you go to your 7-Eleven. Where do you want to go to get your comics?
Drawn to Comics
is a great place. 5801 West Glendale Avenue.
Man, it was you were really setting us up for that one for a while, and I'm the only one who took the bait.
Thank you. Somebody took the bait.
But, for those people that don't know, that is the comic book store that Ken owns. And I've been there, and it's tremendous.
It's pretty awesome.
My secret identity is
travelandleisure.com's 5th best comic book shop to visit in the country.
Thank you. And speaking of drawn to comics, Russ Kazmierczak, I'm doing another plug. We do a podcast we've been working on for about 2 years. And it's been an honor to, and still an honor to work with Russ. And he's a guy that, as the two, once again, this is going off of 101, but We wanted to name the show, and Russ was the person that wanted me to name it Drawn to Comics. And I said, dude, that's too pretentious. And he goes, no, dude, your store.
And nobody could spell Kazmierzak. So I thought,
I thought it would be like, you know,
Kazmierzak.
Oh, it's a great theme. Oh,
the Kazmierzak. That's a pun.
Yes.
It was kind of Thundercats. But I mean, you stole my Thundercats with your. Zach?
Kazmierzak is a new character.
Kazmierzak.
Yeah.
I'm
is he a
it.
Pimp? I don't know. Russ?
He's very itchy. I think we know that.
But warm in the warm winter and life.
That's how my girlfriend would describe me, warm and itchy. So that makes sense.
Okay.
That's an entirely different
comics
conversation.
102.
I was about to say, let's
get to 102.
Corbin just moved away. He just went back.
He's the one with the bleeding nose. He's moving away from me.
He's the one with the bloody nose.
Usually this works best for me, like Q&A. What do you guys want to know?
I was
going to
say,
comics?
I was going to throw out some terms.
Yes.
Long box.
A long box. Oh my gosh, dude. Like long box is a couple different things. There's actually an app called Long Box, okay. And there's actually paper boxes. That you can put your comics in. They call them long boxes.
Okay. And then
they're usually double the size of a short box, which fits about 100 comics. The long box will fit 200 comics, but the long box app has a list of pretty much every comic book that's available, and you can more or less drag and drop the – you can't see my fingers moving across the microphone, but they are. You drag and drop the what you have in your collection into – the right-hand column, and then that way you can keep track of the comics that you have in your collection.
Do we know the development of the long box versus the short box? Was it just, you know, why those amounts were...
The short bus. Isn't there a...
The short box, I think... I prefer short boxes because they're easier to store. Okay. Long boxes are harder to move around. They hold more stuff.
How much do they hold?
Long boxes hold 200? About 200 comics.
200, yeah.
Bag and boarded. If you don't have a bag and board,
I was about
to
ask you next to explain the bag and board, because I used to bag and board mine, and then I didn't. And the problem is if they're like, I know.
I'm sorry. Blasphemy! I know.
Well, I was just
he's
trying to
not kidding.
No, I bag and board them now. I wasn't for like stretch. But
what
anyway,
are you, a teenager
bag and board
1963?
Real quick. Okay. See, Comic 101, I have to ask you to explain bag and board, though.
Okay, a bag and board, but... Let's say like that. I'm trying to think of something funny besides what you do with comics with bag and boards, but
you
I can't.
Get really
so
bored
talk
while
about
you're doing
what it's
it.
For. Yeah, bagging and boarding is more or less just putting protectors around your comics. A bag's like usually about a, I want to say like a 1.5 mil plastic Mylar that is a tapeable flap on it usually, and a cardboard that fits behind the comic inside of the bag. And that just more or less keeps your comic stiff. God, dude, these puns are horrible right now.
Yeah, there were moments I wanted to say things.
I'm going, dude. These
moments until you paused.
This is getting NC-17 all of a sudden. We're losing it. But it's a way to protect.
What's funny is I'm an adult.
Yes. That's the funnest yes. thing you've said.
The
tonight.
Funnest
yeah,
that, thing.
Yeah.
You forgot the E. Funniest.
Nope.
Funniest.
No, it didn't.
But right. it's a way to protect your comic books from getting damaged.
So
if you drop them from a
those.
Cliff, yeah, if you drop from a cliff, there's still going to be damage taken. But
yeah.
it's going to help keep bugs out. It's going to help keep more or less the elements from getting to your comic quicker.
Now, what bugs usually are a menace to your comics?
Oh, man, stay away from your silverfish, man. Silverfish just eat paper like crazy.
Yeah. Yep.
Really?
Yes.
It's because of the bacteria that happens after the paper being closed together for a long time, like humidity in the air and all that things, those parts are, you know, a part of it, but the silverfish are attracted to
they
the
love
bacteria.
Paper.
Yeah, and they destroy it.
All over that.
Yeah, and keep rodents away from your comics. You know, if you like a mouse, good. Keep them in your cage. Keep them away from your comics. They don't need to read with you, man.
Nope.
Just keep them behind the glass while you read comics to them. But another
children,
thing
too, probably. Not
children,
great.
Yeah, children under the age of 3. You know, they don't quite understand their physical ability to hold
nope.
things or to not crumple it up and put it in a ball and throw it against the wall.
Or to not throw a tantrum.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that. Turn the page,
still have
Dad.
That issue.
But they do say, like, any other questions you guys too? Because I'm going to keep on going here.
I am, I'm trying to buy comics. I have a set of comics I'm trying to buy every week.
Yes.
I go to my comic store. The guy in charge, the person in charge. What do you call it when they're putting aside comics for me every week so that I can pick them up on the go and just have my subscription ready for me?
Yeah, it's like they call multiple names, sub files, box files, more or less subscriptions. But it's a way that you can more or less make sure that your comics that you want to read are set aside.
My pull
for
list
you.
There.
Your pull list. Thank you. It's another great one too as well. But it's usually you'll go to a store and they'll give you a list of titles that are available. And you just on our story, we have check boxes. Check off what you want.
Yeah.
And then we have a little signature thing on the bottom saying that you're going to pick up those books you asked to set aside. So we all have to pay for them up front. A little bit of plug of making sure that be a professional and a responsible comic book collector.
So when you say checklist, like if you're ordering sushi? Checklist?
Kind of.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, too, it's like it doesn't take 15 minutes to get your sushi. It takes, you know, sometimes 3 to 9 months to get a comic.
There you go.
Like yeah. how sometimes yeah. Publishing dates come out on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I kind of want to touch back on, you're talking about storage of your comics, right?
Yes.
Protecting. Well, if you want to keep your comics from half-lifing, which is going very scientific term there, try to keep it in
the
a
carbon.
Yeah, carbon dating appreciate does happen. It's paper. It's going to degrade over time. Don't sit there and read a comic outside in Phoenix and let it sit there for more than 3 hours because it's going to sunbake just like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so they recommend putting your comics in a box in a dark room that's about 75 to 80 degrees at the most. Hmm. And then that's going to help preserve your comic. The cooler it is, just like anything, it slows down the degrading process. Hmm. You have to put it in a freezer. Do you know what I mean? Like you don't have to go in heavy coats or anything,
yeah.
But it does. It does help preserve the life of your comics.
So I
the
need
darker
a refrigerator there. For my comics.
If there are people that I know that used to keep their comics in a freezer, which
really
is crazy.
The moisture wouldn't mess it up.
What? Yeah. What about touching the comics? Does the oil from your hands get on there? Do you put on gloves?
I know there are people out there that do. You don't have to. I mean, what I usually do is I put the comic on top of the bag and board. And I flip it open like as gently as possible with both your index and your thumb finger.
Okay.
And it's kind of being over anal on it, but it does keep the oils off of the paper for yourself. And just kind of go to the top corner of the page and kind of flip it.
And
that
if you're
way.
Talking about the oils, like, are you talking about
Cheetos dust?
If you're trying,
yeah,
to
don't
get,
eat Cheetos and read comics, man.
But are you talking about like
you can,
especially the flaming red one?
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Chester even looks down on that, man. Chester, what are you doing?
Chester hates that. But you're talking about it could be the difference between a high grade or an almost yes. high grade potentially if you don't use gloves or no? Is it really
yeah,
not going to make a difference?
It just depends on how careful you are. I know it sounds weird.
Do you want to read them?
Yes, you do. Absolutely.
You want to actually enjoy that you've got a comic book, right?
Do you buy two? Some people I've heard do that.
I used to do that.
There's people that sometimes buy like 100 of the same comic, which blows me away, but they think it was like a stock investment in some ways. I don't recommend it.
Cannot be outpacing the Dow.
If you bought a 12-cent stock in 1962, which 12-cent stock is worth $3.2 million now?
Microsoft.
Share. And I'm just using an extreme example. Amazing Fantasy 15, the first appearance of Spider-Man. Mm, yeah. I think that's why everybody's going nuts right now with this like super hyper market of making everything worth money. It's an anomaly. These things do happen.
That's the problem. That it's
yes.
an anomaly.
Yeah. And so the bubble bursting.
Index as a whole.
People are treating comics like penny stocks right now.
But there's
a
reality
kind of too.
See, here's what happens. Uh-huh. And this happened with baseball cards. This happens with everything. People started to realize that if you hold on to stuff, it becomes worth more, and then everybody holds on to stuff, and it doesn't become worth as much.
That's why those 1960s comics.
Yeah, take Beanie Babies, for instance.
Yeah.
Marvel bankrupt in the 90s, things of that sort. Back then, a lot of that comics crashed because of that. Like, all those ones come out, and people were just buying, Image when they first started?
Well,
were incentivizing the retailers to buy even more, and so they flooded the market.
They fed into that.
But the difference to me, though, between baseball cards versus comic books is that maybe you have a rookie card of Sandy Koufax, I'm going to throw out there. Why not bring the Jewish connection in?
Who's he?
And maybe that's going to be valuable. But at some point, Sandy Koufax retired and he was out of the picture. Whereas with comic books, the characters continue to be.
Well, the stories keep on developing.
Well, the stories continue to develop. But even outside of the comic book world, right? So bleeding into the movie world, all of a sudden. Captain Marvel, who was a comic book character that only comic book readers knew about, right?
Yes.
All of a sudden, she gets a movie, and her comics are worth a lot more than they used to be. And maybe 20 years from now, she may be rebooted, and that will again drive up interest, whereas Sandy Koufax is not going to be rebooted.
You hit it right on the nose, because, from personal experience, too, I used to collect sports cards and comic books at the same time.
Oh.
And when you're high school...
Did you ever get them mixed up?
I did. I used to want to say Dan Marino was part of the Avengers, and it pissed me off when he never showed up.
No.
He just couldn't win. He just couldn't win. The big one.
They actually did do like a sports card comic book crossover when there's so much popularity between the both of them, where they had image artists drawing... the more less of the, yeah, the football cards and the basketball cards and the baseball cards, and it was a mess. But
that's early Todd McFarlane.
Amalgam Comics.
But when it came like deciding as a budget, what made me decide comics over sports cards was that you're exactly right. Comics had a different story every issue. I look at Dan Marino.
And they had a story in general, right?
I mean,
exactly.
A card is a picture with some stats on the back.
Exactly. Yeah. You could get that out of Sports Illustrated. You could watch SportsCenter. The internet made it even harder on sports cards, in my opinion, because everything was at your disposal there. Mm-hmm. And comics were an art medium, you know? I mean, sports could be considered an art in some ways, I guess, because the amount of talent that what they do on the court or on the field is artistic, but it's a totally different medium where you're getting something different.
Just as many people have a framed picture of an athlete as they do a framed picture of a comic book.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or a framed comic.
Was that the original purpose of a sport card? Is you'd be watching a game and then Daryl Strawberry would step up to the plate. You'd pull out his card and look at the stats on the back and be like, oh, we're in for a good one with this guy. Is that what people did with sports cards?
I think it was for memorization. I think a lot of conversation. Yeah. It's like that. Hey, did you see Marino threw for 5,083 yards and 48 touchdowns and 13 picks? It's like stuff that
you Twitter.
Would, well, my dad can recite the stats early from Twitter's his baseball cards from the 1960s. He still remembers the stats. Oh, 1968. That was the year that he batted over 300. Yeah, I mean,
Nolan Ryan, 246 strikeouts in 68 and stuff like that.
Just like you remember, Amazing Spider-Man 121 was when Death of Gwen Stacy.
Yeah. So another comic book 101 question I had was, what if, and this is for me personally, but like readers, not those who are trying to collect, but families trying to get their young ones into comics, or a handsome 20-year-old who has a limited space but wise spending choices.
And, are we talking about yourself, sir?
Not at all.
Glossed over that a little bit.
And they're just trying to buy comics, but just for reading. What would you recommend as far as, you already mentioned storage, you talked about obviously the basics there, but they're not going to buy multiple issues of the set.
Yeah, and you don't. This is like you are the bad writing in a sitcom. Yeah. That's just your real.
He's also trapped in an elevator the whole time.
Somebody's going to have a baby.
A lot of money.
About to have a baby, and Corbin's going to have to deliver him. Oh, Max has cut a car.
His nose is going to bleed.
He's got to put down the comic to deliver the baby.
Exactly.
I'm going to have a baby. Well, maybe you should see my nose right now.
I don't know if I want to transfer.
But what advice or anything would you have in that sense for just the readers, the customers that you have that are just trying to get a book to share with their family, not really concerned with the longevity of said book?
I mean, as I said too, is like that. I always ask customers, like, what do you enjoy? Like that, whether it be books you read or movies that you watch or TV shows that you watch. Like I tell a lot of customers now, comics are like Netflix. There's something out there for everybody.
Pretty much.
And comic books have been that way since the 1940s. Do you know what I mean? I mean, there wasn't just like the superhero genre during World War II. You had superheroes, you had horror, you had romance, you had Archies. You had a little bit of everything even back then before TV. Comics were the form of entertainment with radio.
Well, and for
comics
so long,
had pictures. That's why they were so popular back in the 1940s.
But for so long, they were only superheroes because of some regulations that happened, right? And so that's why people probably
they still did the westerns and the romances and stuff like that.
But so do you feel like it's hard for people because these characters have been around to pick up? Like I even think as somebody, I used to read a lot of them, and I'm intimidated by the fact, what part of the stories have I missed? And if I pick up a new Spider-Man today, am I going to be able to follow it?
Yeah, well, it's a lot of the things too. Like with the movies, you notice in the last Spider-Man movie, Homecoming, they didn't touch on Spider-Man's origin. Because everybody already knows Peter Parker was bit by a radioactive spider.
What? Yep, right.
I know. I'm sorry. Spoiler alert. Peter Parker is a scientist. You know, he went to an after-school study session for science.
His uncle made rice.
Spider got radiated, got bit. Next thing you know.
His uncle made rice in his black.
He tries joining a wrestling organization.
Okay. That's all starting to come together. Right?
Makes his own costume, creates web shooters.
What?
Climbs walls.
No, it's not like a car comes at him and then he jumps and clings to the wall, does he?
Pretty much.
Oh boy.
Pretty much does whatever a spider can.
Yeah.
Spins a web and size.
He saw a red and blue spider and thought it was a great idea to make a costume red and blue.
All right. Any other things that you actually know that you're asking about?
Does that answer your question?
that was it. I'm trying to think of what like someone going
we
in would want
to
know about
fairly.
Comics.
Oh,
but
no,
I think
absolutely.
That
was
a great,
was great
starting point. Yeah.
If somebody walks into your shop, Ken, and says, I want to read The Walking Dead, I've been watching it for the last X amount of years, you're not going to point them to the back issue box where some of those individual issues are tens, if not.
Yeah, you go to the compendium or just easily to volume one. the first like volume one trade paperbacks, the first six issues, and see if they like it. If they want to keep on going, then I would recommend the compendium. I try to recommend the compendium right away because that's the first eight volumes for the most affordable value for $59.99 rather than paying $15.99 per volume. And for eight volumes, you know, do the math. It's
and like, trade paperbacks. You have to go to the beginning at all is kind of intimidating.
It reads fast. That's the one thing about like Walking Dead's the perfect example because the way that they do the Walking Dead, there's no ads. It's just straight story all the way through. That's
pages.
The beautiful thing about Image Comics. If you want to do story, I recommend Image Comics to a lot of people because Image does not do ads in their stories.
And the fact that the great part about Image that really drew me in when I was a little kid, when Spawn came out, Pit, the Savage Dragon, all these things, the stories, there's so many different types of stories that are so different from the mainstream. Image is constantly, pretty much every month, there's some introduction to a new world that has been created. When it came to the trade paperback, I remember when I found out that The Walking Dead was coming to TV, I was like, oh man, I've been wanting to read this, but I just forgot about it. So I went and got all the trades up to that recent point, and I caught up, and then I just kept going.
And to put things into perspective too about Image Comics, like DC and Marvel Comics are all contracted creators that work for DC or Marvel. The beauty about Image Comics, it's all creator owned properties.
Yep.
And so if you have an idea and then Image likes what you're thinking about doing, if they see you doing independent publishing on your own and they see a following happening, they will help you get your books published.
Doesn't DC own Image?
DC bought Wildstorm from Jim Lee. Wildstorm was a branch of Image that Jim Lee, the guy that created Wildcats.
Yep.
And Wildcats was his creator-owned property, but he also did Gen 13 with J. Scott Campbell. Wetworks was something Portacio was underneath that umbrella, but Portacio was ironically working under Jim Lee's Wildstorm. So Portacio still owns, probably gets payments off of Wetworks, I presume, but it's a Wildstorm property. You know, that's a good question. Russ might be able to help me on that too.
He probably makes a couple bucks.
Yeah, I think he would because that was the whole point of Image when he first started is like those are your characters.
Yeah.
All those creators had left Marvel and DC because they were sick and tired of that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Todd McFarlane, like Rob Liefeld, they, you know, got
started
together.
Image, yeah.
Yes, and went up to the Marvel editors and said, hey, we quit. And it was funny too because they had to convince, like they needed Jim Lee, which was ironic because Jim Lee was the first guy that sold off his company back to another corporate company, which was DC. Too.
Yep.
And
sell out. And we'd love to have him on the show.
My good friend Todd McFarlane?
No.
Yes. Yeah, get Todd on here. That'd be great.
That would be
eventually I'll ask. It just gotta be the right time, the right place, and just me.
The right people. You guys talking about baseball paraphernalia collector Todd McFarlane?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, we'll get him to listen to this episode.
Baseball.
All right. So, anybody else got anything? I think that's about it.
Stranger Things coming out.
Yeah,
can't wait.
Oh yeah, you guys talking about? I saw that you were mentioning Baskin Robbins.
Is that where? Oh yeah. Has anybody seen this? The Baskin Robbins commercials. They are basically slowly revealing the Baskin Robbins treat. And then one is just called the Upside Down Sundae. And it's like got the cone stuck into the top of it.
that's lazy right there. Really
lazy. That's just Donnie Rant coming.
Yeah. So look forward to that.
The hell is this? I could have just dropped it on the ground and ate it.
That should be the ending of the show. Okay. So that should be.
Oh, God.
All right. At Comic Playground.
At Comic Playground.
No, you don't have to say it again. You just go in there all place.
Okay, fine.
Hi, I'm Adonis.
And here we go again.
Leave us a review. We want to hear from you.
Keep your legs on the couch and keep reaching for the barf bag.